Welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. Gray area drinking. It's not a term I'd ever heard before, but many of us fit the description. My guest today used to be a gray area drinker, so understands the logic behind it. And just for the record, there are air quotes around the word logic. Like many habits, vices, dependencies, we can all explain away our drinking patterns. But can we away with the drinking itself? Sarah Rusbach knows her stuff when it comes to explaining what happens to our bodies, our brains, our relationships when we give alcohol a permanent place in our lives. I like to believe I know about the health risks I invite into my life, but I must admit, Sarah had me stopping and pondering. This is a fact-driven conversation, so be prepared. And if you're inspired to think about the bevies you enjoy, I am happy to recommend the spirit I've been savoring that has replaced the gin I enjoy so much. Listen now. Here's a statistic that might surprise you. Alcohol use disorder in women has increased over 80% in the last 30 years. Now, you're probably wondering where I'm going with this conversation, as I never hesitate to mention my relationship with wine. I tease that a glass of wine cures all ills, that I love to cook with wine, and sometimes I even put it in the dish I'm preparing. Part of my chatting up the wine bottle is that it is probably one of the most lied about activities we midlife women have. You know, the doctor asks how much alcohol we drink, and we say only on the weekend, or just one glass with dinner, or only socially. All of those comments are true for me, and they are equally untrue if I put a period at the end of any of them. My guest today is a multi-award-winning gray area drinking coach. I'd never heard of gray area drinking until I read Sarah's bio. So we'll learn something together today, and maybe together we will also look at our drinking through a new set of glasses. Sarah Rusbach, welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Agnes.
Sarah, you're an ex-gray area drinker as well as a gray area drinking coach. Please explain gray area drinking and how you came to be a coach, please.
Yeah, so gray area drinking describes the place between someone who doesn't drink or someone who has maybe a glass of champagne every now and then at a wedding or whatever, and otherwise they just don't think about alcohol. Alcohol does not feature in their life at all. So that's one end of the spectrum. And the other end of the spectrum is someone with physical dependency on alcohol. So someone who wakes in the morning with shakes, with tremors, needs to reach for a drink to manage that, and needs to have medical support to safely withdraw from alcohol, because alcohol is one of only three substances that the human body can die from withdrawal from. So we've got two ends of the spectrum. Most people are not either of those ends. Most people are in the grey area, where they don't reach the criteria for dependence. So they're not physically dependent. I wasn't physically dependent on alcohol. I didn't need to drink in the morning. I didn't drink every day. I took breaks from alcohol. And yet, alcohol still featured very heavily in my life and was at the point where it was starting to take more than it was giving. I had a relationship with alcohol. I wasn't a take it or leave it drinker. I wasn't like, oh, do I feel like a drink tonight? Nah, I don't feel like a drink tonight. That was not me. I was like, I'm stressed. I'm angry. I'm pissed off. My husband's doing my head in. The kids are being insane. I've had a hard day at work. I need a drink. And that's that gray area where we're using alcohol maybe to escape our feelings. We're using alcohol as a crutch, as a reward. But we're still very high functioning. We're not at the point where we've become physically dependent. And we are still, you know, probably on the outside, doesn't look like we've got a problem.
I love the fact that you got really excited explaining that. You were really animated. That's really impressive. The prominent quote on your homepage is, "The goal isn't to be sober. The goal is to love yourself so much you don't need to drink." Can you explain that?
So what I find is, I've got a community of 20,000 women who are all looking to change their relationship with alcohol. And when I ask them, why do you drink or why did you drink? There are generally three answers: boredom, stress, and loneliness. And these are all women that are generally aged between 40 and 70, so midlife women. So we have a generation of women who are bored, stressed, and lonely, using alcohol as a reward, as a relaxation, as a switch off at the end of the day. So if we want to change our relationship with alcohol, it's not about removing alcohol. It's about addressing why we're drinking, creating a beautiful, fulfilling, interesting, diverse, adventurous life. And then we simply don't need alcohol. We don't need to rely on it. It's not the only thing we think of at 5 o'clock, because our life is rich and full, and alcohol would only take from it. And that's where I'm at now. I stopped drinking 5 years ago, and it couldn't pay me to pick up a drink now, because alcohol, hangovers, all of the impact that alcohol has on my life would simply detract from the life that I've created.
I actually had your exact words a little bit further on in my notes about boredom, stress, and loneliness. So I found that interesting, as I drink more when a good friend comes over and we get chatting and we're having a good time and, you know, that sort of thing. And it's, if I'm stressed at home alone, I'm aware of what I'm pouring. But when you're there with a friend, it's just like, oh, you know, like you go to take a sip because it's part of the get together, and the glass is empty, so you fill it up, and suddenly the bottle's empty. So I found that interesting, that it's the boredom, stress, and loneliness.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, there are certainly people who drink in the grey area who are doing it more socially, and either it's habitual, which I would say is probably the case for what you're talking about, where it's become a ritual to drink with certain people, or there's lots of women who are drinking socially because they're actually shy, or they're anxious, or they lack confidence, and alcohol gives them a temporary confidence boost in those group situations.
That's really interesting. I remember a time when, you know, like you'd have to do the social thing, and I was reluctant to drink in those situations. So I would have the bartender, whoever, pour me scotch, because I hate scotch. And if I started the evening with 2 ounces of scotch in the glass, there was probably 1.999 ounces of scotch in the glass at the end of the evening. So, it's interesting. Now, I started with your statistic of 80%. Is there, like over the last 30 years, is there a reason for that 80% increase?
So there's two main reasons in my mind, and from the thousands of women that I've supported now. So number one, midlife women are probably the most stressed, overwhelmed, anxious than they've ever been before. We are juggling more than ever, particularly for women that still have kids at home, who are teenagers perhaps, they're working full time. The lines between work and home life have become incredibly blurred, especially since COVID. So you might finish work in an office, but then there's still expectations that you're on email and text and phone come the evening. The women we know generally do the lion's share of what is involved in the running of the home, not always, but in most cases. So you have women who are juggling everything. They might be looking after aging parents, they're raising kids, they're working full time, they're trying to keep the house going, they're trying to go to the gym and look after their body, and like the pressure and the constant expectation for these women is intense. And then on the second point, we've got big alcohol who stepped in, and we know that it was exactly 30 years ago that alcohol companies realized they were not making enough money from women. And so they started to differentiate their marketing and segment it so that they created advertising and marketing campaigns that were directly appealing to women to get women to drink more. So the alcohol industry identified, we've got this whole generation of women who are stressed and anxious and overwhelmed. We've got the solution for them. And so we started to get mummy wine culture, and we started to get this whole rise in pink drinks. We started to get this increase in the direct marketing of alcohol to women as the solution to stress, overwhelm, anxiety. And so you've got this perfect storm of women feeling all these feelings and big alcohol stepping in and going, there, I've got you. Don't worry. Just come and have a drink. And then we started normalizing it, like any WhatsApp parenting group that we're in, and you go, I've had a terrible day. The kids are driving me bonkers. like the first response will be, oh, go home and pour yourself a drink. Like, we have started to normalize in our own circles alcohol as self-care for tired, overwhelmed, busy women. And I mean, you just have to look at Mother's Day cards and all the Mother's Day memes that start going round, and you can see it blatantly in your face that it's become so normalized in society that alcohol is the solution.
Because of my age, as you were speaking, I was thinking about probably the 1940s, 50s, and possibly even to the 60s, where the cigarette companies were doing that. Oh, we've got this group of people. I mean, it was always a men's thing, right? But let's cater the, let's do the menthols, let's do the long, skinny cigarette, whatever they were called, cigarettes for women. But of course, through the latter half of the 1900s, the 20th century, smoking fell majorly out of favor. So is that, I'm wondering if there's a correlation, then the alcohol companies stepped in and said, hey, let's take over where the cigarette companies got booted.
Totally. And I think that I need to double check this, but I know that one Philip Morris, which was the biggest cigarette company back in the day, when they realized that tobacco sales were going down, they bought two of the biggest food companies. And I'm sure that they bought an alcohol company as well so that they could simply move across. And so big tobacco became big alcohol and big food.
Okay. And I wonder too, again, because of my age and looking back over a number of decades, is that there was always this vision, this stereotype of the businessmen getting together. I mentioned scotch, you know, having a scotch after work, or, you know, discussing, you know, who's going to get the next promotion, whatever, that men's club. And I wonder, as we women got more and more into the executive level, C-suite kind of stuff, whether it was like, oh, this is what we do. This is what people do.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, there was a big movement. I'm 48 and I was raised in the UK before we moved here to Australia. But back in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was a real shift in female empowerment, in women can have it all. There was Sex in the City. There was, you know, those four incredible women that were really singing from the rooftops that women can have it all. We don't need men. We can drink our cosmopolitans. We can have one night stands. We've got each other. We don't need to rely on a man. And this was an incredible movement. But at the same time, that was where, for so many of us, the alcohol intake became part of that, because it was, I'm going out with my girlfriends and drinking cocktails and drinking champagne. I don't need a man. And then that just, you know, perpetuated this movement towards women using alcohol more and more in different ways. Because I don't remember my mum going out with her girlfriends and drinking cocktails and drinking wine. And I certainly don't remember my mum drinking wine at home while she was cooking and things like that. Like, mum and dad drank, but it was at dinner parties, it was at social gatherings, that was when you drank. Whereas I feel like the movement now has come to this society where it's just normal and expected that alcohol is just what we do to manage life. And I think what I'm here to say is, yeah, and that might work for a little while, but then it gets to the point where it stops working. And when you notice that it stopped working, and we can come on to what some of those signs might be, you have full permission to change, and you have full permission to change your relationship with alcohol and go on to create a life without it.
Interesting that you mentioned Sex and the City. I've never seen even one episode, but you also mentioned one night stands is apparently the rate of sexually transmitted infections in mid and older age women is gone up incredibly. So okay, so you say that alcohol and menopause don't mix. I'm just going to throw that little aside in, because I'm rather irreverent that boomer women are post-menopause. Is that splitting hairs?
Look, I think that the thing that women need to understand that I didn't know, that it's really important that we understand, is women cannot metabolize alcohol in the same way as a man. So women and men's physical bodies metabolize alcohol differently. And there are a couple of reasons for this. So number one, women generally have less water and more body fat. That's just the way that we are designed than a man. So when a man drinks alcohol, there will be more water in his body that dilutes the alcohol. So there will be a lower blood level, blood alcohol level than for a woman. And the second thing is there is an enzyme called ALDH, alcohol dehydrogenase. So alcohol dehydrogenase breaks down and metabolizes alcohol and gets it out of the body as quickly and efficiently as possible, because alcohol is a poison and a toxin to the human body. Men produce more of this enzyme than women. And as women age, so from our late 30s onwards, we produce even less of it. So by the time a woman is in her 50s and 60s, the amount of ALDH that she produces is really small, which means more alcohol enters her blood because it can't be effectively metabolized and removed from the alcohol because we have less of the enzyme than does it. So women are more vulnerable to the health risks of alcohol than a man. So women are more vulnerable to liver disease, we are more vulnerable to heart disease, and we are more vulnerable to the 7 types of cancer that alcohol causes, and particularly breast cancer. So it's just, and the thing for women as we're aging is from our late 30s onwards, our liver volume starts to shrink. So by the time a woman is in her 60s and 70s, her liver volume is a lot less than it is in her 20s. Again, which means by the time a woman is this age, she cannot metabolize alcohol in her 50s and 60s like she does in her 20s. This is why we might start to notice the impact that alcohol has on us. It might be why we feel intoxicated quicker. It might be why we notice it disrupts our sleep a little bit more. We might notice that we feel a bit more anxious the next day. All of these things, and for women and menopausal, it really increases our hot flushes. So there's a lot that we need to understand about how alcohol is metabolized in our bodies, especially as we age.
All that you said about the liver changing as we get older, is that visual? Like if a doctor or somebody is looking at your body, your liver through, well, it's not a microscope, but whatever they're looking at, if they could cut you open, for example, I don't want to be gruesome here, but is there a noticeable difference between the liver of a 30-year-old and my liver at almost
70?
Yes,
I believe so. I believe so. Obviously, I'm not a doctor, but from all of the research that I've done in my menopause coach training, it's the volume of the liver that begins to shrink.
The reason I asked that question was because one of the ways that they managed to turn so many people off of cigarette smoking was a picture of those black, ugly lungs of a cigarette smoker. And I'm wondering if that's going to be the next thing on alcohol labels is, you know, this is your healthy liver and this is your alcoholized liver, your pickled liver.
Yeah, so, I mean, they've got lots of images of liver cirrhosis and they can show what it looks like when that's happened. It's interesting you say that because in January next year, Ireland will be the first country that starts putting health risks on alcoholic drinks. So that is starting to happen.
Isn't there already health risks like for pregnant women?
Only for pregnant women. So, okay. But there are a lot of alcohol directly causes cancer. So it's a level one carcinogen. So alcohol is in the same category as tobacco when it comes to your cancer risk. And a lot of people don't know this. Yeah. And so this will start to be put on, it's nothing to do with pregnancy. This is just your general health. And Canada in 2023 was the first country to come out and say there is no safe amount of alcohol and drinking more than 2 units of alcohol per week is going to start impacting your health negatively.
That's next in my notes. Recent health recommendations. Yeah. So, which is crazy when you think about the fact that it was only 2 drinks a week as sort of the maximum recommended. And I listen to a lot of talk radio, and I've heard a lot of doctors and specialists come out and say, it's got to be 0, you know. And having heard you explain, it really starts to hit home. And I guess as I say this, I'm wondering, like, how do we drill that into my cohort? That it's, you know, as fun and social as it might be, it's not going to be fun and social when you end up in hospital with whatever cancer or cirrhosis of the liver or something.
And I think it's also about recognizing. So if we think about gray area drinking as being a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being that person that doesn't drink and 10 being that person who has you know, physical dependency on alcohol and needs medical rehab support to withdraw, where would you sit on that scale? And I would say grey area drinking is about a 3 to a 7 on that scale. So where are you on that scale? And what could you do to bring yourself back a little bit? Because if we are drinking significantly, it's very unlikely that that is not without its negatives. So while we can sit there and go, oh, but alcohol's so fun and I have the best times when I'm drinking and all the rest of it, we actually need to just pause and ask ourselves, okay, what's my energy like? What's my sleep like? What's my mood and emotions like? How do I feel when I show up every day? And what's my anxiety like? And actually start recording that and then working backwards. Well, is alcohol affecting that? Because for many, many people it is. And I've worked with many women in their 70s who've removed alcohol and they've gone on to create wonderful, fulfilling, incredibly energetic lives because they're not impaired by terrible sleep, low energy, anxiety, and all the other things that come from drinking.
Right. I interviewed, and I didn't realize you weren't Australian, but I interviewed another Australian woman a while ago, and it totally unrelated, but somehow alcohol came into the conversation. And I commented how popular the non-alcoholic beverages were in Canada, especially among Gen Z folks. There are full-on bars, in quotations, set up that are totally non-alcoholic. Now, she was quite surprised. Do you know, sort of, is that a, once again, maybe West Coast Canada? I don't even know if it's on the East Coast. I'm on the West Coast of Canada.
It's amazing. Absolutely. So it's growing here in Australia. We've got alcohol-free bars. The alcohol-free drinks industry has increased and grown by 500% in the last couple of years. Like, it is a growing movement, because here's the thing. When I stopped drinking 5 years ago, all that was available to me when I was going out with my friends and they were drinking their wine and their champagne and their cocktails was I could have a water. I could have a really high sugar soft drink, which I don't ever drink sugar, like liquid sugar, or I could have a really sweet mocktail that was just sugar in a drink with a few soft juices. But I don't want either of those things. I still like the taste of a beautiful alcohol-free champagne. I still like the taste of a great alcohol-free gin and tonic. And so these drinks have been incredible for so many of the women that I work with, because, you know, when you were talking earlier about the connection piece and the ritual that you might have with a friend where they come over and you have a drink together. Most of the time, it's not even the alcohol that we need. It's just that we've got into a pattern and a ritual of having that drink. But if you're just bonding over a shared drink, you can have an alcohol-free drink and still get that same connection, but you're not impacting your sleep. You're not impacting, you know, you're not putting yourself under the health risks that you get from having alcohol.
I had that thought because, once again, I'm pulling the age card, is any time in the past, and we're going to say back 20 years, if I were to buy a non-alcoholic, or I think the word at that point in time was de-alcoholized, wine, they were disgusting. Now, when we're finished here, I've often said, if somebody can point me in the direction of a really good non-alcoholic gin, I'm all over it. I don't even buy gin because I love the flavor of a good gin and tonic. So that's interesting. Now, while I was researching for our chat today, I came across a website, I think it's a Canadian one, that offers like over 1,000 choices with no alcohol.
Yeah.
And I was going to ask you if, you know, if we're going off of alcohol completely, should we be going off alcohol adjacent? But I saw on your website that you actually have some things that you recommend for those people who still like that social drink in quotations, but don't want the alcohol.
So I've got so many women who have gone alcohol free by using alcohol free drinks. And that has been the best thing for them. There are other people for whom alcohol free drinks are super triggering, make them want to drink alcohol. So it's a case-by-case scenario. And it's like, you see for yourself, if you have an alcohol-free wine, does that scratch the itch and make you go, that was all I needed? Or do you have it and go, I really feel like a drink now? you've got to experiment for yourself, because for so many people, and this is where grey area drinking comes in. For grey area drinkers, the alcohol-free drinks are often fantastic. For people who are at the higher level, if they're at 8, 9 and 10 on that spectrum, they're probably going to find the alcohol-free drinks more triggering. And so it's just about experimenting for yourself and seeing what works for you.
As you say that, I remember that I did know a person who was a recovering alcoholic, and they wouldn't even look at like a grocery store beer, like it's, because it's just, it is triggering.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So you told us what happens to our livers when we drink. If we quit, do we get some of that health back?
Yeah, we absolutely do. And that's the thing, particularly about the liver, is it's regenerative. So in 6 months, we can undo a lot of the harm that we have done from drinking. And the same with when we remove alcohol, like our blood pressure comes down, our cancer risk comes down. A lot of my ladies, I get them to take a selfie photo on day one, and then they do a selfie at the end of the program, and they can't believe the difference in their face. And because alcohol bloats you, it makes you tired, your eyes look very dull, and like they just can't believe the changes in their face, especially they lose weight, they their bloating goes down. Like there's so many changes that take place.
This is crazy that, you know, I mean, I'm well aware of our Canadian recommendations, like zero, all that sort of stuff. But it's always, I don't know, a little bit of a glossy news story, as opposed to you saying, okay, you know, like maybe the sleep is an obvious one, but, you know, your skin, your eyes, you know, like probably heart attack risk, cancer risk, all those things come down. I mean, that's a huge incentive.
Absolutely. And you know, on the cancer risk, the breast cancer organizations, on their website, it clearly says, anything more than 3 drinks a week increases your chance of breast cancer by 15%. And for every drink above 3 drinks a week, you increase your chances of developing breast cancer. And yet they did a study at a university here in Australia where they asked, you know, many, many, lots of people about, they asked the question about, are you aware of the link between alcohol and breast cancer? And only 20% of women in Australia aware that alcohol is linked to causing breast cancer. So the actual awareness is very, very low. And that is because the big alcohol companies have worked as hard as they can to try and keep that information down, because otherwise it'll affect their alcohol sales. And things like that, that's where my passion is. That's where my passion in what I do and why I get up every day and do what I do is because I'm all for someone going and drinking as much as they want when they've got the full knowledge and the full facts about what alcohol does to them and the health risks that come with that. But when you've got an industry that is trying to keep that quiet, to keep people spending money on their product with no consideration, care or concern for the health risks that their product is causing to these people, that's where my issues come in.
I was thinking too that we talked about the cigarette companies, and suddenly it was sort of a glamorous, elegant, very cool thing to do was to smoke. And now big alcohol, as you call it, it's, we can't have fun without it. You know, that's all the party things, all the good times, being, I was going to say being on the boat, which is another huge issue. And maybe we should go there for a moment in terms of, you know, I guess, you hear about how people feel more confident after a couple of drinks. I can do this, I can do that. Now, we all know that you're going to get a huge fine and possibly even banned from driving if you try to drive. But I don't think there's rules around boating and, you know, all-terrain vehicles and all that sort of stuff. Probably even riding a bicycle.
Yeah, no, there isn't, absolutely. And that's, you know, we need to just be aware of the fact that alcohol will alter our brain state so that we act, say, and do things we would not do when we're sober. And so, you know, a lot of people say, oh, but I need alcohol to have fun. And all I can say is alcohol takes you away from your true authentic self, because if you act in a way that you would never act when you've been drinking, is that really who you are? And actually, when we remove alcohol, we go on a journey of discovering who am I at my most authentic self, because alcohol distorts that person.
Well, and what comes to mind for me too is that meme or whatever they're called that says, "Dear Agnes, of course you're a marvelous singer. Love alcohol." You know, that exactly. Sort of thing where you wake up next morning or somebody says something at the office next day, and it can be truly embarrassing because you've had this false feeling about whatever, your abilities under the alcohol. Okay, so if we have a listener out there who's thinking, I really need to cut back on or cut out the alcohol, are there any easy-ish things they can do to like kickstart that journey?
So I always say to start with, take a break, right? Just take a break and gather information. And people say, how long a break should I take? And I say, in an ideal world, you'd do 90 days. And here's a sign as to whether you're in the gray area for all your listeners right now. If your immediate thought, when I say to you, starting tomorrow, let's do 90 days off alcohol. If your immediate thought is fear or horror, or you immediately get, I can't do that, you're in the gray area. Because a take it or leave it drinker would just be like, huh, sure, I'll take 90 days off. But if we are attached to alcohol in some way, we are in that gray area, and that's where alcohol's got a role in our life. So just be curious without judgment as to what comes up for you when I make that suggestion. If 90 days feels too big, let's start with 30 and take 30 days off and just simply see it as an experiment. What is 30 days in your life? Right? What is 30 days? It's nothing. It's a drop in the ocean, but it's going to give you data. Because what a lot of my women realize when we start working together is outside of pregnancy, they haven't taken 30 days off alcohol. And actually, when we take 30 days off, we get important information and we can start going, okay, what's my sleep like? What's my mood like? What's my energy like? What's my self-talk like? Because here's what happens when we remove alcohol. Our mind gets clearer. We start to feel more positive, and then our world starts to open up, because we're not kept small and kept quiet, just going a bit, feeling a bit meh, 6 out of 10, 5 out of 10, because we had a couple too many drinks last night, we're a bit tired. You know, we don't feel hungover, we don't have to be in bed, but we're just feeling a bit meh. That's how I felt for years, and I just thought that was normal, and that was what you had to put up with as a busy middle-aged mother of two, right? But as it turns out, no, I feel 9 out of 10 most days, right? Take a break and use that break to record information of how you feel. And then really like throw yourself into the resources. So I've written a book, Beyond Booze. That would be a brilliant place to start. Read my book, start to get information, listen to podcasts. I've got a 30-day program on my website that gives you daily videos with information and resources and starts to change your mindset, because we live in a world where alcohol is promoted, marketed, and expected at pretty much every social occasion, every social event we go to. So we've got very strong inbuilt beliefs in our brain that we need to have alcohol to have a great life. And actually, that's just brainwashing. That's just brilliant marketing. And we've all been treated like idiots that just fall for it, hook, line, and sinker in my mind. And go, oh yeah, we all need alcohol to have fun. And I like, having now lived my life 5 years alcohol-free, my life is more fun, more interesting, more adventurous, and ticks so many more boxes than it did when I was simply relying on alcohol for my fun. Because I don't need to rely on a mind-altering substance anymore. I get to create my own fun. It's just done in a different way. You know, it's not done in bars and people's houses of an evening, getting home at 3 a.m. feeling like rubbish. Now my fun is getting up at 5:30 in the morning, going for a sunrise walk with a girlfriend, going hiking, doing sauna and ice baths. I was at a hip hop concert last week. I've got so many rich activities in my life, but most of them are during the day, and I'm in bed by 9 o'clock most nights because that's what I love. Then I'm up at 5 and I just have so much energy and feels, you know, when you and I were arranging our podcast and you were like, oh, Sarah, that's at like 6 a.m. Is that all right for you? And I'm like, well, we can do it a bit later, but there is I do a lot of podcasts at 6 a.m. because I'm up at 5 and I feel fantastic.
That does explain a lot, because I was thinking, I mean, I'm up at 6, so I'm not that far behind you, but I was thinking 7:30, like, oh, well, who knows what her routine is, so that's, you know, whatever, you chose the time, so that was good. You said an interesting thing that I totally identified with, too, is if you're not going to drink alcohol, is I don't drink soda pop, so it becomes... You know, and I'm so glad now. I didn't even realize there was that many until I started researching and I came across this website. Like, I'm going, 1,000 plus? That's amazing. And I'm so glad that companies are recognizing that there is a huge market for the non-alcoholic beverages. I'll drink a tonic water, but I will not drink soda pop. You know,
I really love, I'm just looking for something because I've got some notes I wanted to share with you on something. Really love half soda, quarter tonic, or like three quarters soda, quarter tonic, loads of fresh lime juice, and loads of mint and ice. Like, that to me is one of the most refreshing, beautiful drinks.
That's interesting. I was just at a cocktail party last week. Now, I was DD, so I was drinking my tonic and whatever. The gentleman that I was chauffeuring had, I don't know, so he's an older gentleman, he doesn't really drink much, so he had one alcoholic beverage and then he went to tonic, and he had, I'm looking at his glass going, like, I've got all this fun fruit in my tonic water, and he had all these green leaves, which must be mint. So that, oh, I'm gonna have to give that a try then.
I was looking for something because I know before we went live that you were talking about dementia, and there was just something I wanted to share with you that you may not know when
alcohol
it comes to
induced.
Alcohol.
Yeah, alcohol-induced dementia.
So if a person consumes more than 30 grams of alcohol per day, which is about probably two standard drinks, they need to take vitamin B1 theamine supplement, and that is because alcohol causes a deficiency in vitamin B1. And a deficiency in vitamin B1 puts a person at risk for a specific type of dementia called WKS. And so, again, it's really important to know that there is a really strong link as well between alcohol and dementia. There's a brilliant book called Can Adventure Prevent Dementia by Dr. Helena Popovich. And she's got a chapter in there that is specifically on alcohol, where she talks about the impact of alcohol on dementia and the fact that a lot of people are actually misdiagnosed with Alzheimer's, when actually they are, all of their symptoms are related to alcohol.
Which could well hit home. I think there's a certain... maybe cockiness, you know, we reach 70, 75, whatever, and we're cancer free, we're clear and good, we're whatever. But I also know, and I've had this discussion with several people, is if you forget something or do something silly at age 25, you sort of go like, oh my goodness, and whatever, you go do it, go pick it up or whatever it is, you don't think twice about it. But the minute you do something or forget something at age 60, 70, 75, is you've got this big fear about dementia setting in. So adding alcohol into that is, yet another reason to.
Yeah. And she, and then heavy alcohol use is a cause of dementia. And there's a study that came out from the University of Oxford last year that now links alcohol to 60 acute and chronic illnesses and diseases, 30 of which had never before been linked to alcohol.
Ooh, let that sink in.
And I don't share this to scaremonger, but I do share it because, like I said to you before, my mission is not to say you must never drink, alcohol is bad. My mission is to inform people so they can make informed decisions, because we live in a world where alcohol is glamorized and promoted as self-care and harmless fun. And it's not. It's a level one carcinogen. We just have to remind ourselves of that sometimes, because, you know, even product placement in TV shows and movies where the police detective woman comes home from a hard day at work and she throws her coat on the bench and she goes straight to the fridge and pours herself a glass of wine. Like, we are getting this messaging constantly that alcohol is normalized self-care. And it's just important that we remember that it's not.
Well, and two, if I've noticed on our news, if there is a serious car accident or a boating accident or any sort of equipment accident, they always make the comment that drugs and alcohol were not involved, or where they're doing investigating to find out if drugs and alcohol could have been a cause. And so it's still up front and center, but I guess we hear what we choose to hear.
Yeah, and it always makes me smile when they say drugs and alcohol. Alcohol is a drug.
Like, yeah, oh, true.
Let's,
yeah,
you know, like, it always makes me smile. So over here where I live in Western Australia, a lot of people work in the oil and gas and mining sectors. Okay. So they have to do tests every day before they can go to work. Oh. And the test to make sure that they are not intoxicated. So it's an alcohol and drug test. And it's like, no, let's just call it a drug test, because alcohol is a drug.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, isn't that funny? Okay, so this listener has decided that she's going to, we have up here November. So in November, let's say no to alcohol for a month. Whatever time frame, you know, it's July, they're going to quit drinking for, try your 30 days. But their best friend or their spouse is going like, what are you doing? It's just this nice social thing we do together after work. And getting that grief. Do you have any suggestions for that person who really is trying hard, but sometimes they end up succumbing to the pressure?
I think it's really important to, I feel like the people that give you grief are the ones that have the problem with drinking. I had friends that were very, very against me quitting drinking, and they were the ones that drank a lot. I had other friends that are like, yeah, I don't care if you drink or not. And they were the ones that had a very healthy relationship with alcohol, and they were not grey area drinkers. So the people that are most likely to be the peer pressure people in your life when it comes to alcohol are going to be the ones that have a grey area drinkers themselves. And you probably have quite a few of those in your life, because I find grey area drinkers surround themselves with other grey area drinkers, because then we don't have to feel like our drinking is that bad, because we drink like the other people around us. And we're like, everyone drinks like this. This is normal. And so I think it's really important to think about, why do you want to take this break? And then be honest. Like, something I didn't do that I wish I had done at the beginning was just being honest with people and just said, alcohol's really impacting my anxiety, it's impacting my energy, it's impacting my sleep, I'm just taking a break for a while. And that's what I recommend people to do, because when we're just honest, it's going to have to be a certain type of person that you say, alcohol's really negatively impacting me. And they're still trying to get you to drink, right? So ask for support and just say, I'm going to take a month off. I want to see how it makes me feel. I'd still love to see you during this month. But hey, let's start doing lunches. Do you fancy going for a walk every Sunday morning? Do you fancy, just think about other things you can do, so you still get that connection, but it doesn't have to involve you being in a bar watching your friend drinking while you're not doing that. Because it's not to say you can never go to a bar again. It doesn't bother me. I go to bars, I go to nightclubs, I go dancing, I do all of those things without alcohol. But at the beginning, I didn't want to be around people drinking. I was quite protective of how I was feeling. So it's just go with what works for you, but just make sure you maintain some connection. It might just be in a different way.
Well, as you're explaining that, I'm thinking, if I'm making a life choice that's really health-based, and my friend, air quotes, cannot support me, I have to question that friendship.
Totally. Totally. And that happens, and I see it all the time. I run alcohol-free challenges for women 4 times a year, so I just started one yesterday. And the next one will start on the 1st of October, and which is Sober October here in Australia. And there's usually between 500 and 700 women from all over the world that come into the challenge, and they all take a month off alcohol together. And, you know, it's the biggest thing that, my ladies come up with is the pressure from their friends. And that's when you find out who your real friends are.
Yeah. Which is interesting, too, because I think most people have quit pressuring their friends to, oh, just one more. You know, I know if I have people over, it's like, it's on the table. You decide how much you want or don't want. And I think just about everybody I know would never dream of saying, oh, come on, you can have one more, which was also very common back in the 70s and 80s of, you know, your glass is empty. And that's why I would drink, there have the scotch, is because people see me with a glass in my hand, they don't bug me to have a drink.
And that's why the alcohol-free drinks are great, because people often don't even realize that you're drinking something non-alcoholic, and then they just leave you alone.
Yeah. There you go. Okay, you've mentioned your book. Tell us about your book.
So my book is called Beyond Booze, How to Create a Life You Love Alcohol-Free. And it's a book for women. And it's a book with all the tools and strategies that I've implemented and that many of my thousands of women have implemented to create a life they love. They don't need or want alcohol. So we've got a chapter on how to have fun without alcohol. We've got a chapter on how to manage stress without alcohol. We've got a chapter on how to navigate your relationship, because a lot of my clients, they and their partner have drank together for a really long time. And so when they remove alcohol and their partner still drinks, it can be complicated. I've got clients who really struggle with intimacy when they're not drinking, because the time that they will get intimate with their partner is after a couple of drinks, and they feel uncomfortable and don't feel relaxed to be able to initiate intimacy without alcohol. So there's a whole section on that. There's a whole section on your friendships and socializing and everything like that. So I'm getting such incredible feedback from women all over the world of all ages who are reading my book and just saying how helpful they're finding it.
So it is for women, and you've explained why, you know, how alcohol affects a woman's body differently, but many of those same things apply to a man. Like, I'm just wondering if the couple could do it together based on reading the book.
Yeah. And I have had lots of men read my book and tell me how much they've taken from it. But when I sat down at my computer and I wrote that book, it was for a woman. It was a woman in my mind, and it was to help women navigate everything that women are juggling in their life to make these changes.
Right, right. Now, you also have courses. You've mentioned some of that. Can you tell us about what that's all about?
Yeah, so I have different programs. Some of them are self-paced. There's a 30-day alcohol-free program on my website that you can buy at any point and commence your 30 days with daily support, daily videos, lots of resources and everything like that. As I mentioned, four times a year, I run a live challenge where every day everyone's coming in for that month together. They get daily accountability, support, everything like that.
Sorry, I have another monitor over here. That's why I'm looking. There was something that when I was looking around your website, I don't know if I can find it really quickly, but it was like almost like a series of things. Is that your gray alcohol or your gray area drinking?
So I've got a courses page, and on my courses, you will find there's tools and resources for being alcohol free, but then there's also tools and resources for women. So there's a women's well-being pack, which has got information on nutrition. It's got information on managing stress. It's got information on menopause. And then you can buy all of those packs separately. So I've got a sugar and nutrition reset month. I've got the Grey Area Drinking Bundle, which is incredible guest expert talks on all things grey area drinking. So there's a few different modules in there that that you can buy at any point. I'm all about empowering and educating women to make the smallest changes that create their healthiest and happiest lives.
Yeah, that's I noticed that it isn't just about the not drinking. Yeah. It's also about health and wellness, like that, the whole gamut, which I guess, you know, one leads to the other, certainly to a large extent. You know, you obviously still have to make arrangements to make sure you're eating healthily as well, but
exactly,
all the other choices probably become easier if there's no alcohol involved. Where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
Yeah, so my website is just my name, Sarah Rusbach, RUSBATCH.com. And I have a free Facebook community called the Women's Wellbeing Collective, which is a brilliant free resource to ask questions and get support. And on Instagram, Sarah Rusbach.
All right. Before we close, can I ask you a personal question?
Sure.
You live in Australia. I sound like a stalker. I'm not. But I try to look into get as much information about my guests as I can. You've traveled. If you put your travel agent hat on, where would you send us? The UK, you're from the UK. I saw Cambodia. You seem to have traveled around Australia. Where should I go on holiday?
New Zealand. New Zealand. I have got a very soft spot for New Zealand. Have you ever been there?
I haven't, although my son lived there for a few years.
Right.
Okay, I won't tell you that he owned a bar. So maybe fortunately I didn't go down. That's okay.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
New Zealand everywhere, or do you have a couple favorite spots?
Oh, the South Island, I think, is magical. Wanaka, Queenstown. Yeah, just absolutely the most picturesque, beautiful place I've ever been.
Okay. Just because I saw Cambodia, like, what was that like? Totally different culturally.
Yeah. I went there to run a half marathon. And yeah, it was amazing. Very, very different.
Yeah. There we go. Okay. Your website link is in the show notes. All of the links are on your page at our website. Listeners, I know you have thoughts on today's show. Is alcohol part of your life? In a big way? In a little way? Have you thought about giving it all up? Talk to us. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. Or what did I not ask Sarah? Ask it in the comments and I will get you an answer. Leave stars and reviews where you can. They help us grow. Share this episode. I don't think I know a single... Oh, I'm admitting this. I put it in writing. I don't think I know a single person who doesn't drink alcohol, despite all the medical warnings out there. If you've tried to analyze your drinking habits, good chance a friend has too. This conversation today between Sarah and me can be the prompt to a conversation with your friend. And you could well have an accountability partner as you reduce or eliminate the alcohol from your life. I'm going to pause there. Does it help having a partner in crime, an accountability partner?
Absolutely. And that's why I run these life challenges, because the women just find that having the support with others makes all the difference.
Yeah. So smart. Okay, to continue, you can help the Boomer Woman's podcast keep growing. You can buy me a coffee. That's a pretty cheap option given my taste in coffee. You can subscribe to Buy Me a Coffee each month, and that does gain you some age-specific perks. The link is in the show notes and above Sarah's head on her page at our website. You can visit me at Substack. Following there is free, unless you want to throw some coin in that hat. Sarah Rusbach, thank you for being my guest today and being candid about your own experience. Interestingly, I think just a lot of people say, yeah, well, that's me, and don't think too much about it, but you made that choice. And you've given us an incentive to look inward and hopefully make some smart choices around our own alcohol experience. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Have a great rest of the week.